This is the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous Podcast with iHeartRadio.
The Almost Famous Podcast is going nowhere. We're here to stay for as long as you want to keep listening. Hey, Ashley.
Hi, Ben. What's up? I hear you're going to Honduras in 2 days.
I am. It's a big deal. So I'm going through all the steps right now because, you know, international travel, you have to get a COVID test. This will be my fifth COVID test. And I
your fifth COVID test for this?
No, in general, since the beginning, you know, with all the stuff from the show. And then I try to get one anytime I travel, just because there'd be no worse feeling than like getting on a plane, flying to, you know, somewhere and then finding out. Yeah. So anyways, I'm getting my COVID test. Which is never fun, not ideal. We're going down to Honduras for the weekend, myself and just a few others, because as you heard us talk about in the podcast a couple months ago, the communities that we work with in Honduras were hit twice, like within 3 days by two major hurricanes. And so the waters have kind of gone down. We're going down to figure out, hey, how do we rebuild? What's the need right now? So I'll be down there for the weekend. I'll be back Monday to talk about it if anybody has any interest in it and to kind of share what we find. It's going to be pretty hard. I think it's going to be a really difficult trip because a lot of the stuff that's been done over the last 11 years and a lot of their homes have been wiped away.
So sad.
But I, you know what I hope for, and I'm kind of holding on to this, is when we get back and on Monday when we talk, I'm like, all right, it sucks. Like, there's nothing about this that's not not bad, but there is a path forward, you know, like there's already stuff going on and there's, you know, can be more stuff going on, you know, once we kind of rally the troops. So anyways, I'll be down there for the weekend. Ashley, this week, I mean, we only have a few weeks left in Matt James's season. The headlines haven't stopped. We're going to break down headlines. We're going to break down the latest episode, but also one thing we have to talk about, and one thing we want to kind of sit on for this podcast is, especially, is everything going on in Texas since the last time we talked.
I was going to say the Honduras thing was not the only weather tragedy we've had this year. Now we have Texas, and our friend Blake was down there. I think he had a DJ gig and he got stranded down there. And honestly, like, in comparison to everybody else's living situation, Blake was probably pretty lucky, but we're going to get all the details from him later in this podcast. But first, we want to go do a rundown of the episode. It was hometown week.
Yep.
And what was your initial thoughts?
Ashley, I don't know what's
thank
going
you.
On.
Same.
I don't.
Okay, phew.
I feel like a downer. So here's my issue.
Me
I say
too.
This
I
stuff.
Hate it.
Yeah, and we can't be downers because I know there's people out there really enjoying this season. I mean, there's parts of the season I absolutely love. You know, Matt being one of them. I think he's a great dude. I've always liked him since I met him the first time. I think a lot of these women are really fantastic. And I'm wondering, and again, I just sound like a broken record. I'm wondering if because I haven't been as invested into the relationships up to this point, is why this hometown week, which is usually one of my favorite weeks,
felt
like it fell short to me. What do you think?
Exactly. I'm like, why am I not feeling anything?
Yeah.
Especially since, like, I got to hometown week and I was like, okay, well, I'll start to feel a lot of things now. Like, now drama's over. Like, these are the ones he's taking seriously. Didn't feel it. Do you know what I felt the most?
What's that?
In any scene. In this week's episode.
Yeah.
Just try to guess.
I mean, Matt talking to Michelle, maybe? Like, one-on-one?
Michelle's kids. The kids.
Okay, that works.
That's when I actually felt like a little heart flutter. Mm-hmm. And so let's start there. It was the first date of this week.
Yeah.
Michelle first takes him, what do they do? Bike riding? Bike riding.
Yep.
So nothing really monumental there. Then her family was probably the nicest as well. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really made me feel something was the fact that all the kids from her class, or not all the kids, some of the kids from her class, zoomed in. They had him on a big screen. They kind of grilled Matt. He had the perfect answers for everything. He's so sweet. You could just see how much the kids love Michelle, how great of a teacher she is.
Yeah.
But, like, that was the only thing that made me feel.
I mean, it's really sweet though, fluttery. Because obviously her connection with those kids right now is virtual for the most part, right? I'm sure they've seen each other, but like, it's got to be a wild feeling to be zooming in, and then these, you know, these kids seeing their teacher, like that's that in itself is wild to see your teacher like on a date, like pursuing the love of her life, and you're asked to like zoom in and say hi to her. I also imagine that it's a great feeling for her. I think it's probably like no matter what happens at the end of the show, I bet she feels super supported by the people that she sees the most often, and that's special.
Yeah, that was so sweet. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about her parents. Okay. It was just the two of them that were there. They seemed to have a really nice marriage. They seemed to be very supportive of her. They were the least grilling of all the families.
I would say so.
I think the only thing is that, like, you can tell she's so invested. She's saying that she'd say yes to a proposal. You know, she's had less time than the other girls. And then they played basketball together at the end. And that seemed like a nice little family moment. He definitely had most fun with them.
This is Michelle's story is pretty crazy if we take a step back from it. You know, this relationship has moved very fast. In fact, right after her very first one-on-one date, I think most of the fans watching the show went, there's something special here.
Definitely.
You know, she really stood out.
She zoomed to top four, I think.
Like, unlike anybody else. Yeah. She just like immediately placed herself there. Like it was like, which almost makes me think maybe this is the best connection, because it's like right away they knew they had something special and it hasn't waned. It hasn't strayed away from it. Now,
yeah,
it is the first one-on-one date. I would say typically on this show, that's not a great sign when it's aired first.
Is it really? Do we have stats on this?
No,
do
I don't
need
know.
Bachelor data to tell us about this?
I have no clue what the stats are. I'm just saying typically when an episode is finished, I remember like the last two hometowns. I don't necessarily always remember the first hometown. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like just in my head, it's not a great sign. But again, this is the family that felt like they were the most supportive of the relationship between Michelle and Matt. They felt like the family that did wanted Matt to have a good time with them.
Yeah.
They wanted to get to know him. But that moves us into Rachel then. I mean, Rachel obviously is somebody that Matt has had feelings for a while. We've seen her on a couple one-on-one dates. What did you think about the way, like, let's start at the beginning when Rachel, you know, kind of blindfolds Matt. What did you think about how this date started? Like, did you feel like there was something good going on, or did you feel like the connection was distant?
I felt like for the first time, the connection was distant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm thinking you asked that question because you felt the same.
Yes, I did feel the same. And I don't know if possibly it's because
the things that have gone on in the past week.
Well, yeah, I think that I definitely think like mentally for the viewer, but like that like plays into it. But I also think it's possibly like the nerves of what was up to come. Like, you know, this date was not one that you're like relaxed by. Like, I think in the back of your head, it's hard to be so focused on a relationship when you know you're about to drop 12,000 feet out of a plane.
Yeah.
So that could be it too.
That could totally be it. I was missing the part where any of them talked about doing it for the first time. Did either of them say that skydiving was the first time?
I don't remember this.
Because I think that for some reason, that's like critical to me.
Okay.
In this, right? I don't know, because if it's your first time doing it, like you may not want to do it. I guess both of them just, you know, were cool about doing it. But I think that with him being a risk taker, he would have been down. But like, was this something she wanted to do, or is this something that she was like, I'm going to impress him with by doing?
Have you ever done it? Have you ever jumped out of a plane?
No. Have you? I feel like you've done it.
I haven't. So I said this the other day. And I would love to hear from all of you listening right now. If you're listening, please tweet us and hashtag the Almost Famous Podcast, or go on our Instagram and comment on this, or send us an email at benandashley@iheartmedia.com. I would much rather, and I don't know if this is a popular opinion or not, jump out of a plane than I would bungee off of those like bridges, you know, that you see.
Agree.
I would much rather jump out of a plane.
Me too. But I really have no desire to do either.
No, there's not like, I would do it if I felt
like. I feel like you would totally do it. Why do I feel like that?
Well, I would mostly, I feel like I would do it if I was trying to prove that I wasn't like a wimp.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think Matt truly wanted to do it. I think he was excited for this date. And I think she was obviously cool with the date. Somebody would have probably gotten it. The producers were probably like, we have this opportunity. Maybe they gave it to her first and she took it. They go up there. You're right. Maybe that distance was out of nerves. Then they go up there, they fall, and then she takes a hard landing. She
like
really
hard,
does.
Like a really
like
hard
landing.
You
feel it. Yes. Yeah.
Really hard
landing. He was concerned. And then you see from him that he's just like, oh my God, I really just realized how much I love you, basically. Like, I thought that like my future, you could tell like without him saying it that he was like, I feel like my future wife just like could have died in front of me, blah, blah, blah. And even when he's saying this, I feel like she's not as receptive to it as mostly as the other, as maybe Michelle or Brie would have been.
Well, yes, that could be. Also, she took, I mean, her fall was not just a fall. Like, it had to hurt. I'm sure it shook her up and adrenaline.
Okay, fine.
But yes, no, you're
right. No, you're right.
I think that's a fair point, though, is it didn't feel receptive. Now, why, we don't know. But it definitely had to shake her up a bit. Like, that fall hurt. Like, that was one, like, I'm sure everybody on set that day was freaking out. Like, we just had a massive issue. It kind of reminds me to pause here for a second. You can go to my Instagram right now. Jason Tardik, who is the boyfriend of Caitlin Bristow, and I had a bet on a football game. And Buffalo Bills fans do this weird thing where they jump off of stuff onto tables. And so the bet that we made was, if the Colts beat Buffalo a few months ago, then he had to be at a Waffle House for 24 hours. And for every waffle he ate, an hour was subtracted from his time. So he can pound like 20 waffles, only be there 4 minutes or 4 hours.
Okay.
If Buffalo won, then I had to do the whole Buffalo Mafia jump thing onto a table. I did that.
I feel like you got the easier option there.
Ashley, it hurts so bad today. Like,
never mind.
You can go to my Instagram and watch this thing happen. It hurts so bad. I jumped off of the tailgate of my truck onto a table, onto like my concrete driveway, which I've learned now that you're not supposed to jump feet first. You're supposed to jump like head first, and you're supposed to jump into the grass. There's so much that I didn't know. Anyways, I did it. And so I can relate with this where it's like for a couple hours afterwards, like I was a little shaken up. Like my wrist was hurt. So then we get into.
So you guys negate what I said about her like not being receptive to it. You're right. Her whole body just slammed against it. And you can actually tell how badly she was hurt when she was talking to her mom about how bad it was. She's like, Mom, like I have a lot of makeup on right now covering bruises.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. So you just brought up the parents. We meet Rachel's family. I think this was going to be a very telling time for Matt, just like any family he meets. But I think his relationship with Rachel has gone fairly well up to this point. I think I was expecting something major to happen because it's like this, no way it's going to be this easy, for them, because there really hasn't been any controversy, between the two of them. And, you know, just like Matt brought a lot of controversy on any of these relationships. Well, so we meet the parents. Rachel's dad said right away he'd be surprised if she was in love. Ashley, what do you take from the meeting of the parents?
I mean, obviously the dad was one of those dads that we see every season. Yeah. He was the token dad that was really hard on him, not really buying anything, really had no interest in really talking to him, being that there were three other girls still in the running, which I get, like, a lot of dads would have that issue. But I wish that like parents would at least, we saw it with Bree's mom too. Like there's just like some attitude towards it. It was like, you knew your kid was signing up for this show. Like you knew if they got this far, you and them would be in this position. Like let's not put it on Matt. Let's like not make it seem like Matt's the bad guy here. He's not. This is just the process.
Well, and it's a weird time to be the bachelor when you walk into these rooms, because there's one thing you don't necessarily want to do. You don't necessarily want to ask every dad for their approval to propose to their daughter.
Yes, and a huge note here. The only person that this really came up with was with Rachel. Rachel was the only of the girls that Matt said, I didn't ask your dad for permission because I don't want to do it with so many other girls here. He didn't say that to any other woman. Like, you could tell that he's already in his mind planning a proposal to Rachel.
It is the scariest thing to be sitting there in general. And then to be talking about that with the dads, especially some dads that you know it's not going to happen with, it just feels dirty. Like, there's not a lot of things I think you have to do as the lead that feel like dirty or manipulative. Mm-hmm. Now, there's things that happen that you choose to do that are manipulative. Like, that happens. But there's not many situations that you're like, that, like, the show sets you up to be manipulative. This is definitely one of them. It was a very uncomfortable thing for me. I know it was very uncomfortable for Matt. It's just really odd because it's the first time you meet the family. You're really hoping they like you because at this point, you're pretty emotionally drained. You're exhausted. You can see the end. The finish line is near. And you have one big thing in front of you this week, and that's talking to the families. And you have to sit down with these dads or these moms or whoever it is, in some cases, uncles and grandparents and grandmas, like whoever it is that you ask. And it's just heavy. Like, it's not, yeah. It's not fun. I will say,
right.
It's one of the memories from the show that I remember being, having the least amount of enjoyment in was mm-hmm. the end of Hometowns when that would have to happen.
I get that. But don't you wish or respect the fact that Matt was like, I'm not going to ask now. I'm going to call your dad. And it was weird to me that Rachel she said she was bummed to hear that. And I'm like, girl, don't be bummed. That's very exciting. He's definitely going to call your dad one day.
I think it is one of the best things Matt could have done because ultimately the relationships on this show, only one of them will survive. Let's just say for the sake of this conversation, Rachel and him end up together at the end. Well, then he and Rachel are going to start a life together. These other women are going to matter to him. I know he cares about them, but they won't have really a role in his life. And so for him to start out on the right foot with her family, as he like starts to enter into her family, is really important. So I think it was a great move. I just don't think Rachel understood what exactly Matt was saying. That's what I get from I think she was a little bit like confused on, wait, is he telling me he's not there? Is he telling me that, you know, he's not asking my dad because he can't see that? Like, I just don't think she got what he was saying. And I think Matt secretly, just like, if he would have said it without being filtered, was like, hey, Rachel, I'm going to ask your dad here in a few weeks if I can marry you. So I'm not going to ask him today.
Yeah.
So just like, understand that. And anyways, well, what was the overall tone that you got from Rachel's family? Like, do you feel like they're excited about this next chapter? Nervous? What do you think?
They weren't super warm and welcoming. The mom seemed nice. It's just the dad was just the grizzly bear dad.
Yeah. We see it every season.
Yeah.
We do.
And, I mean, but like also like moving into Bree's section of the episode, it was kind of like the grizzly bear mom.
Yeah.
She was not keen on anything.
It's really hard. I mean,
do you know what I mean?
Well, definitely.
She was not warm to him.
Well, and it's really hard, I think, as a parent, because I don't know what it feels like to hear that your kid's signing up for this show. I can't relate with that. I mean, my parents were kind of more confused, I think, at the start. And then it's all kind of fun and games, right? Then there's some excitement around it. You know, you kind of celebrate it. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, crap. Like, this is like life-altering, life-changing. Like, what we're talking about here is going to change our son or daughter's life forever. And
yeah.
And I think that's where it might hit these parents, where it's like, can we just take a second? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, this, can we just take a second and like not be okay with the fact that you're telling me that you're in love and this guy's also dating three other women right now? I get it. I just think there's like a good way to go about it. In a way that doesn't really help any party involved. And I think going at it aggressively and being like, I'm against it, or going at it and being like, this is stupid, I don't think helps. I don't think anybody's going to respond well to that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just like wish that they would be like, think of it more as a, oh, we're getting to know him type thing. We'll see where this leads, and less of a like intimidation situation. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe like everybody, most families would be harder. I just feel like my mom would be so giddy, and my dad would be like, "This is the effing craziest shit I've ever been a part of. I cannot believe I'm here. This is silly."
Well, and how would that feel, right? So say your dad does show up, and
my dad needs to come on the podcast and be like, "This is how I would have been."
But what if he shows up and you're in love and you're like trying to pursue this next step and it's already a little weird to you, and he goes, this is silly. It would hurt you, right? It would hurt you. You'd be confused, but it would be a fair thing to say. Like, this is silly, guys. Like, take a second. Now, it works sometimes, and that's why we love the show, because sometimes love comes out of it. But let's be honest. This week especially feels silly because it's so hard on the lead, and it's also hard on these girls, and their families are there, and you see the families for, like, a couple hours, and then you leave, and you're like, hey, next time I talk to you, I might be engaged. Like, that's wild. That's just wild.
I know. Okay, let's go into Bree's date. So Bree takes him, what is it called? Four-wheeling, sort of, off-roading. And she's, like, getting payback for that time that he took her in the four-wheeler and, like, tipped it over and all that. I can just tell right off the bat that she... that he feels the weakest for Bree.
Why?
And I feel like, why? I don't know. He just, like, every time she kind of, like, explains her feelings, I feel like instead of having that excited look in his eye, he's having that, like, oh, man, I'm going to have to let her down one day look in his eye.
Interesting. I mean, okay, so you're saying, not that you don't know, you're saying you see it in his eyes. Like, you just...
I feel like I see in his eyes.
Okay, you see it in his eyes, fair.
Especially at the end, and I don't mean to jump, but at the end of meeting her family when they're sitting outside and she said, like, I'm falling in love with you. It was, first off, like, we see that a couple weeks ago, Matt says, I'm falling in love with Rachel. So we know that she's so far ahead in this game.
Yeah.
Then with Michelle, she says, I'm falling in love with you. And he doesn't say it back, which is telling for us as an audience that she's not up to par with Rachel. But he looks excited and very happy to hear that from her. When Bree says it, he just, like, kind of nods and doesn't smile and then makes out with her.
Well, that's always a good fallback plan on the show. When things get weird, just start kissing.
Yeah, okay. So they go four-wheeling. She says that she still feels bad about the fact that she wouldn't be able to give Matt a conventional family, which is, like, really sad. But Matt says that it doesn't matter at all. And they go in and meet her best friend, her mom, and then the baby sister. And, of course, it's very sweet to see Bree interact with the baby sister. And he's, like, being like, oh, man, I can, like, really start visualizing families with these women. And then Bree's mom comes and goes and chats with her. And she says that she feels like there's a mutual connection. She says that she's falling in love with him and she's so scared. And her mom is like, I want to protect you. Because, like, the worst case is, of course, you know, she's going to have a broken heart, but that they could mend that together and they'll survive if that does happen.
So we have this date. I'm with you. It does feel like the one. I still, and I'll share my opinion here in a second. I think Serena, obviously, with how the show plays out, she's, like, obviously the least into Matt, which I think at this point is pretty telling because
I called last week.
So then we have Bree, I think would be next. This is a little side tangent. Watching this episode, though, even though, yes, I don't think their connection is as strong as Michelle or Rachel's, I think she has Bachelorette written all over. I think with how bad she wants to find a partner, I think also with just who she is and how she's been on the show, I think she has Bachelorette written all over. I'd be shocked.
Okay. Okay. Really? Because I would say that Michelle would have a hand up on her.
Really? Interesting. Well, we'll watch. I mean, there's a couple, some seasons you and I are sitting here at this point being like, yeah, none of these people have Bachelor or Bachelorette, you know, written all over them. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I think we said that when Ari became the Bachelor. We're like, who from this season could be the Bachelor? Like, nobody. Like, that. This doesn't make sense. And then he became the Bachelor. I think with this season, they have like four or five names we could say, oh, yeah, that could work. Oh, yeah, that could work. I mean, I just think it goes down the list. Well, let's jump into Serena's then date here. I mean, this is a really important part of the episode, especially now that we know how it plays out. You know, watching their first part of the date, and putting it into the perspective of what we know at the end, I think, I'm not shocked, but I think this is going to have a dramatic impact on Matt's next few weeks because he's going to be worried about this thing happening again.
Uh, I'm sorry, I keep jumping ahead, but what the heck is the scene to the next episode?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Fine. All right. Yes. I loved, like, I think Serena is one of my favorites. She's just fun to hang out with. I love the fact that she set up the Canadian getting to know Canada date. That was fun. And then, like, the ice hockey. That was cute. She's just really relaxed seeming on TV. Like, she seems like she's being very much herself. She's not putting on a show, and you can tell because she ends up, you know, being honest with her feelings and not going forward with it. Her family was, like, honestly, I wasn't even thinking about her family very much, because I think the most monumental conversation during that family meeting part was the one between her and her sister, in which her sister was like, "You don't seem smitten." And then there was the conversation with her mom about doubts, because apparently she was so rocked by her last failed relationship. And I think the whole point of the whole theme of that meeting was less about Matt and more about just Serena kind of realizing that she didn't have it with Matt. And did you feel the same?
Well, and I wonder too if this will be good for her, right? I mean, you kind of need that. I don't know if you want to call it motivation, if you want to encouragement. You know, when you get out of a tough relationship, you need that next step. And not that she went into this thinking this was the next step. She probably went into this thinking, "I'm ready." But you realize that, hey, I'm not ready. But now I at least see that I'm not ready, and I can start to work on that. And I think that's maybe where we're going here. Is I don't know if this is as much of a thing to do with Matt, even though, you know, he is the right one for her. But is more of a, hey, I'm not ready for this commitment. I'm still hurt. I need to go back and heal.
I think yes, but no, because I feel like that's kind of what she wanted it to be. Like, oh, like, I just need to get over the past in order to move forward with him. But then when she sits down with him and actually breaks up with him, she says, "You're not my person." And I think she really knew in her gut that he wasn't. And I can't believe that it's actually a little kind of funny that they made it seem like she was totally dumping him. She walked him out. Yeah. He had to get in the SUV.
Yeah, it's so sad.
It's really sad. I feel bad for him. But I also think, like, he knew. I'm just speaking for what I'm seeing here. I think he was like, "Oh, man, I really like Serena. I don't think she was the one." I think in his head, he knows that Rachel's the one. And I think now his fear is that it's that Rachel's going to realize that her feelings aren't strong enough for him. And then she's going to leave. But I'm looking at the scenes for the next episode. Now I can talk about it. Does she leave? I think she's the only person who could rock him the way that he looks.
Yeah.
Rocked.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is 2 weeks, by the way. We're talking next week's Women Tell All. I mean, there's always been this kind of hint that, like, there's something to come, right? Yeah. Rob Mills has always been hinting at, hey, this season's finish is wild and it's worth tuning in for. And, like, so far I'm like, okay, well, how things are going, it could be beautiful and it could tell a love story, but I don't know if there's, like, something gripping. Now we're seeing hints that, like, this is going to end in dramatic fashion. And I agree with you. I think Rachel right now feels like the only one that could do that to him, but I have a feeling it's not her. I think it's one of these other women who leave as well, and then he's confused and he's starting to feel like, is everybody going to go away?
There's no way that Michelle leaves on her own. No way. She's very much preparing and excited for an engagement. And then Bree also feels like she's there, even though I don't think he's there with her. So I truly cannot figure out what he could be so emotional over.
Well,
but I'm excited. Yeah. I'm actually really excited now.
Yeah. Are you excited for the Woman Tell All?
No.
Okay. Why?
I'm not a huge fan of the tell-alls.
Yeah.
It's just rehashing old drama that usually doesn't really come to the best conclusion. It will be interesting to see Victoria and see if she takes any sort of accountability for her actions, because it seems like in the scenes to the next episode, you see her like try to explain that it was like her insecurities that got the best of her, and that's why she hopes that people will forgive her. But I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to say. I think this cast this year has been criticized and celebrated all at once. I think early on, people were probably pretty frustrated with the bullying. Pretty disgusted, maybe the better way to say it, with the bullying. Mm-hmm. I think that as we've gone on, there's been a couple women really shine and go to the top. So I'm excited to kind of see how they're doing now and how they're processing it. But I'm not like, this isn't a tell-all that I'm gripped by. In fact, I am excited for the next couple weeks of the show, though. I'm excited to get back to these relationships and to see how it plays out. Well, Ashley, just like we do every week, rank this episode A to F, please.
I think for hometowns, it was a C. And I hate comparing everything to Tayshia's season. And you guys know that like Tayshia's season was one of my favorite seasons ever.
Yeah.
But like I felt so much for every hometown visit.
Yeah.
I felt like I really got to know the guys better. I got a good grip on how Tayshia's relationship with the family would be in the future. There was a lot of warmth and acceptance there. And I just didn't get like the same uplifting vibes with this.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a C as well. I think for hometowns is always one of my favorites because there's always something cool from home that comes in. You know, they get to meet the families. You get to see like their lives a little bit, get a picture into them. This just didn't do it for me. But hey, who are we? We're critics. But typically we're not. Like typically we're pretty favorable compared to most on this show. And I don't know, maybe we're completely off. Tell us if we are. Hey, Ashley, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to Blake Hortzman, who was in Austin this last week during the ice storm. And Ashley and I also have compiled a list of organizations and places that you can support as listeners right now that can help the people in Texas. And so we're going to read that list, talk to Blake when we come back with the Almost Famous Podcast.
Hey loves, it's Paris Hilton, and my new podcast, This Is Paris, is out now. I just wanted to do a podcast because I feel like I have so much to talk about. There's so many things that happen in my life that are so exciting. I want to be able to connect with you all. Just in the past like week, I've been talking to so many of my friends and just really just fun and interesting and hilarious and really cool people that want to be on the show. So it's just going to be so different to be the one asking questions because I'm so used to everyone asking me questions.
I've seen the guest list of people coming on this podcast. Oh my gosh. I could not get these people. So I'm really excited that I'm on this podcast with you, Paris. This is going to be an insane run. And if you guys want to listen to it, you should.
Listen to This Is Paris on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, guys, we have Blake on the line. Blake, tell us everything, start to finish, about your week last week stranded in Texas. Why were you there in the first place?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a quick trip. Ended up being about almost a week. I went down there to play a DJ set at a rooftop bar there down called Summit down in Austin. And we were warned, you know, when we went down there, people were like, you know, there's like a winter storm coming in. I was like, I'm fine. I'm from Colorado. Like, yeah. It'll be fine. You know,
like, oh yeah. Big storm coming to Texas.
Yeah, right. I was like, I'll be fine. But I remember we woke up on Saturday. I was supposed to play Saturday night. We woke up on Saturday and my flight had already been canceled for Sunday. And I was like, that's bizarre, but it's fine. We'll like book another airline or something. You know, it's gotta be something else. It was weird. Cause it was cold. It was Texas cold. It wasn't like, you know, Colorado cold, Minnesota cold, Canada cold, nothing like that. We did the gig and it was outside and stuff and it was great. You know, it was like, you know, mass, all that was worn. It ended up being really successful. We woke up the next morning and everything was canceled. The whole city was shut down. And that's why I you know, a lot of people in my DMs were like, you know, it doesn't even look that bad out, blah, blah, blah. But like Texas is not built for that kind of cold and that kind of weather.
And like, let's pause here then, because there's a good note there. You're right. I was, I was in Nashville at my future in-laws' house during this, and they shut down too for a week. Now, they didn't lose power and they didn't lose water, mm-hmm. but when you say not built, like in Colorado, you get a snowstorm and the plows are out, the salt trucks, the, you know, the beet juice, like everything's out on the roads. It's taken care of overnight and you're back to going again. Yep. You know, the planes have the de-icing, you know, solvent, like all that happens. Well, in Texas, they don't have those things. Like, why would you buy 30 plows if you use it once every 100 years?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's, and even like, yeah, Denver DIA has some runways yeah. that are heated. You know what I mean? So like they just weren't, yeah. We woke up Sunday and there was still no snow, but it was cold. It was like 20 degrees or so. Sunday night is when it got really bad. I'm not gonna lie. Like it was even a decent amount. It was like a good blizzard. Like so they had 7 inches in a couple hours and it was blowing really hard, some crazy snow drifts. And that's when I was like, oh no, you know, cause like you said, there's no plows and there's no salt. So the roads were no joke, 2 to 3 inches of ice. It was scary. It was really, really bad. Like just walking across the street to the 7-Eleven took me like 15 minutes because I was walking so slow and so gingerly.
What about the food situation? You were living off 7-Eleven food because there was no room service. Like you just couldn't eat a real meal.
Yeah,
that applies to so many people in Texas.
So many right now, and that was the scary part. That's when I got real because, so all Ubers were shut down, all like Uber Eats, Postmates, all those shut down, and then the hotels were running out of food, and the trucks could not get in to deliver the the packages of food and stuff like that, shipments of food. So we slowly started running out of food. We got to the point where we were eating like, you know, whatever they had left in the kitchen, like ham sandwiches and things like that. They were making sandwiches for us. And the other thing about Texas, all their pipes are above ground. So none of them are like below ground or anything. So I don't know a single hotel. Maybe there's like 2 or 3 hotels in the city, but hotels and apartment buildings that did not have a pipe burst. Like everybody I knew, pipes froze and burst and just spilled water everywhere. So they were running out of water. There was no power. There was no food. It was like the end of times down there. It really, really was. It was scary for a lot of people. It was a lot.
And the thing is, too, is to note is if you could have eaten at 7-Eleven every day, that would have been great. Like you could have done mm-hmm. it. But what happened was there was no ability to get into the city or to replenish this. Like nothing was doing. So that food was running out. The hotel food was running out. Water was spilling all over these hotels. Like, and then let's throw on top of it something that you didn't mention. You know, Texas a few years ago changed their power grid and deregulated yeah. it and privatized it. And it shut down. I mean, all power had shut down across the whole state. They're doing these rolling blackouts. Tell me about that. What is a rolling blackout?
I think the way it works is they basically cut power on purpose mm-hmm. in neighborhoods to lessen the amount of power being used and the amount of, I guess, overuse by the system. So I think it's just rolling blackouts. They purposely would send, you know, certain neighborhoods blacked out for like a couple hours here or there. And that was honestly like, my hotel didn't lose power, but I remember I was standing in line. There was like, you know, a 40-minute wait at the hotel lobby to get food. And I remember standing in line. There was a couple ahead of me with a newborn baby. And they were like, we had to come here. You know, we haven't had a power in 2 days. And they were like, we can't, you know, it's freezing cold in our house and we don't have food and have a newborn baby. So they're like, we come here to grab some food. And they were able to finally get us a room. But a lot of people were just hanging out in the lobby because they wanted heat. You know, so it was pretty wild down there. It was really scary.
My buddy, one of my best friends since I was little, he has 3 kids all under the age of 6. He lives in Austin.
Oh,
and they lost power and obviously then they lost heat. Their house got down to 40 degrees inside. So they went to a hotel. They drove like 2 hours to a hotel. That hotel lost power. They drove back to their house, found a generator, and they were heating one room. And this is what he told me. And it's crazy. He goes, hey, I was driving, and it feels like end times. Like, there's cars parked everywhere. Yeah. There's cars abandoned. There's people, you know, one of the things that was on the news last evening that I saw, and it's still happening, where there are people in the city park. Like, Austin was able to get water running to the city park, and there's like a 3-hour line of people with buckets. Filling up their buckets with clean water just to take it back home. But one of the things he told me was right before this happened. It was Valentine's Day, and his wife had gone to the grocery and bought a bunch of stuff to like do for Valentine's Day dinner on. Mm. And he goes, that's the only reason that, you know, we aren't in dire need is because we just happened to time it perfectly, not knowing the results. But like grocery stores had ran out of food. I mean, this is not funny. This is not like, this is something that is still affecting the lives of people in Texas. And that's where I want to transition here for a second until we talk about your trip to get back to Denver, which is, I think, super interesting. There's some good resources out there, and please continue to share them. Maybe on our Instagram page, comment some good places you know. But the Salvation Army of Texas, go to give.salvationarmytexas.org. American Red Cross, obviously we know about the Red Cross. They're massive. The redcross.org is their website. Not the what, it's just redcross.org. And then Austin Disaster Relief Network, you can go to ADRN.org to donate there. Definitely something that still needs donations. Definitely something still impacting people in Texas. But Blake, you were able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
It was. Yeah. So I think basically Tuesday night, we were like, you know what? If our flight gets canceled again tomorrow, Wednesday, like we got to find a way to get to Dallas because flights are getting out of Dallas. We're like, and what sucks is like, we were holding up in a hotel where maybe a family whose home is flooded and cold needs it, you know? So we were like, if we can get out, they can use, I mean, we even checked out of one hotel early so that another family could come in, you know, cause I went through four hotels in like 4 days. So I was like, we need to get home, you know? Like, so we get to the airport, as soon as you're going to security Wednesday morning, course flight gets canceled, and they canceled, they went over the intercom and said no, all flights are grounded for the day, there's nothing to get out of Austin. We're like, oh my god. So we're like, okay, let's go run and, you know, get to the rental car. We go to the rental car, of course there's a huge line, everybody thought the same thing we did. So we get there, there's no more rental cars available. I start calling other rental places in town, nobody has a car available. We're pretty desperate at this point, because we didn't have a hotel that night, and I didn't know what we were going to do, sleep in the the airport or what. So I get on my Instagram and I basically was like, you know what? Please share this, post this, whatever you can. But if there's anybody already going from Austin to Dallas, I will hop on. You know, me and my buddy Eric, we'll hop in. We'll pay for snacks. We'll pay for gas, like whatever we can do to hop in with you. And I got some inquiries, but then there was one girl and she was like, you know what? My cousin just got one of the last rental cars in the city and she's driving to Dallas and then to Oklahoma City. She's like, she's by herself. Like, we want you to go with her. That would be great if you could go with her. So she gave me her number and we ended up talking and I was like, yeah, let's do it. She's like, I'm leaving now. I was like, perfect. We're at the airport. We're packed up. Like, let's do it. Yeah. So it worked out and she was great. You know, thankfully she was awesome girl. And I'll be completely honest. The first 30 miles from Austin took about 2.5 hours and it was scary. Like, it was really, really scary. The ice that was on the interstate was so bad that even like a percent of an incline, these semis were rolling backwards on the interstate. It was terrifying for the first like 30 miles. It took us about 2.5 hours. We were weaving in and out of these semis that were going backwards. There was actually literally tractors on the interstate trying to like pull these semis up these tiny grades, like tiny, tiny grades, you know, like almost like an on-ramp. Like, that's the kind of stuff they would get stuck on. There were semis jackknifed all over the road. So it was really bad. And there was a moment where we got really lucky. We had two huge decisions because we actually went to a 7-Eleven and
7-Eleven
stocked up on food
through.
And water. Yeah. We stocked up on food and water because we were like, we're going to get stuck on the interstate over the night. Like, we're just going to have to sleep in this car. And we ended up pulling off the highway right at the exactly the right time. We went on like a dump road for a little while, for a good 20 minutes. And then this is probably the sketchiest thing I've ever done. We were getting on an on-ramp to get back on the highway and the semis in front of us stopped and started rolling backwards. Oh my God. We threw it in reverse and we whipped it around and we ended up going on an off-ramp the wrong way and turn onto the interstate because all the semis were stuck. So there was nobody on the on-ramp. All the semis were stuck behind it. And we ended up getting back on the interstate and then we were the only car for the next, I don't know, 100 miles because every other car got stuck behind the semis. The one move that helped us get through. And then it took us another 4 hours after that to get to Dallas. But once we finally got there, it was a good feeling. And then we got out the first thing the next morning, first flight out. But it was scary. And I feel for Texas a lot. Like I said, a lot of people think like, oh, they're overreacting or whatever, but it's not. It is dire down there. And like Ben said, this isn't something that's going to like overnight get better. I mean, people have lost homes. I mean, the power. I mean, it's almost like a hurricane down there. Like, this is going to take months for them to get back on their feet.
This might be a silly question, but how did it feel driving in a car with somebody you just met and like needing to trust their driving skills in such conditions?
Yeah, it was funny. And I'm actually going to have her on my podcast at some point, I think, and talk about it, because it was hard. It was a lot, because like I said, those first 30 miles was, and she was driving the first 30 miles, and it was scary, especially too, because of course, you know, like her phone was blowing up because I like tagged her in a story and her phone was blowing up. And I was like, why don't you just put your phone down for a little while? Let's go drive on the road. But no, we got really lucky because she was awesome. She was a great driver. She wasn't like she had driven in stuff like this before. So that was a plus. Like me and her had both driven in winter, you know, so that helped a lot. But I got lucky for sure. Could have been really bad.
So Blake, you were in Texas though, just to give a little shout out to your podcast with Eric, which is your co-host on Behind the Rose podcast, which you guys do together. You're down there for a gig. You make it back to Dallas. You're home now. Is there any other ways, you know, we just mentioned a few organizations that people can donate and support. Is there anything else you know of from being down there and seeing and hearing about it that you would want to tell people to focus on?
Yeah, actually. And I have a story, like one of those highlights in my profile where I put the trip. And then I also put like a bunch of places you can donate or whatnot. Austin Mutual Aid is actually raising money for families who are now maybe in a hotel for the next month because their houses are completely destroyed. So Austin Mutual Aid is a great spot. There's a couple others. You know, what was really sad was seeing, you know, like you said, Texas does not use this weather. A lot of the homeless out there, it was bad. You know, they were there. I knew, met some girls who spent like $1,000 on blankets and they were running around giving, you know, homeless people these blankets. So there's a lot of places you can donate to help out the homeless, out there in Austin and Dallas and Houston. But yeah, in my story, there's a lot of resources. So,
okay. Well, go check out Blake's story. In fact, Blake, I'm going to do something right now. I'm going to steal that slide and I'm going to post it myself. And then Almost Famous podcast can probably post that or, you know, we can pass it around. It's thanks for sharing the story. What a wild few days for you. You know, it is a story you'll tell for a long time, but it's also, you know, let's spend this time hearing from you and then focus on Texas, because that's, you know, I mean, I can't imagine it. It just crushes me to think that like there's people without homes out there, unprepared, you know, alone, isolated, and there's people losing their homes now as well. And like the cost to that, there's just a lot, man. So thanks for sharing. Let's go out, respond. And anything right now other than the Behind the Rose podcast that you want to give a quick shout out to that's going on in your life?
No, that's pretty much it. Check out Behind the Rose podcast. Follow me at balake.h. But that's pretty much it. Appreciate you guys having me on. And like I said, we'll share as many resources and fundraising abilities as we can. So
thanks, buddy.
About Texas.
Hey,
thinking
appreciate
about
Blake.
You guys in Texas. Love you. The biggest headline coming out of Bachelor Nation this week has probably come out during this podcast recording. Matt James has put out a formal statement regarding the Chris Harrison and Rachel Lindsay Extra interview. Now, he did discuss this briefly on his Instagram story last week. He said in a story, "I am beyond grateful to have Rachel as a mentor during this season. Your advocacy for the BIPOC people in this franchise is invaluable. I stand with you and the rest of the women advocating for change and accountability." But just now, he put out, I'd say, a more formal statement on his Instagram feed, and this is what it reads. "The past few weeks have been some of the most challenging of my life, and while there are several episodes left of the season, it is important that I take the time to address the troubling information that has come to light since we wrapped filming, including the incredibly disappointing photos of Rachel Kirkconnell and the interview between Rachel Lindsay and Chris Harrison. The reality is I'm learning about these situations in real time. It has been devastating and heartbreaking, to put it bluntly. Chris's failure to receive and understand the emotional labor that my friend Rachel Lindsay was taking on by graciously and patiently explaining the racist history of the antebellum South, a painful history that every American should understand intimately, was troubling and painful to watch. As Black people and allies immediately knew and understood, it was a clear reflection of a much larger issue that the Bachelor franchise has fallen short on addressing adequately for years. This moment has sparked critical conversations and reporting, raised important questions, and resulted in inspiring displays of solidarity from Bachelor Nation. It has also pushed me to reevaluate and process what my experience on The Bachelor represents, not just for me, but for all the contestants of color, especially the Black contestants of this season and seasons past, and for you, the viewers at home. I will continue to process this experience, and you'll hear more from me in the end. My greatest prayer is that this is an inflection point that results in real and institutional change for the better. Like Matt says, he has plenty more to say on this, and I'm assuming that we'll hear a lot about this topic during After the Final Rose. He was not the only person to speak out about race in Bachelor Nation this week, as this conversation fortunately continues.
Going from that then to this story, Trista Sutter on her podcast that is called Better Etc. The headline reads, Chris Harrison will do the work that is necessary to learn from his mistakes amid Bachelor controversy. This is according to Us Weekly.
She says on the podcast that she does not condone racism nor participating or defending it. She says that she wants us to all do better, of course. She wants to be better allies. She says that she thinks it's important to highlight racial inequalities in the world. But she said it's also not okay for certain people within Bachelor Nation to shame other people within Bachelor Nation who are not directly involved with this controversy because they haven't spoken up. She said that being said, she should Harrison should be held accountable for his words and actions. She said that Bachelor Nation feels like family to her, but just because you're family doesn't mean you have to agree with the other person's words or actions.
Definitely not. Well, Tayshia Adamson says, to chime in here, Chris Harrison stepping aside from The Bachelor is a really good thing. This is according to People.
Yeah, she said that, I'm going to read this direct quote. She said, I think after reading his apology, there's a few things that stuck out to me. It hit my heart a little bit more to know that he actually meant what he was saying. He said, by excusing historical racism, I defended it, which was absolutely the truth. And the fact that he called that out and owned up to that and he acknowledged that means a lot to me. She also said that the fact that he said this is not just a moment but a commitment to a much greater understanding that will actively make each day that he will actively make each day also meant a lot to her. She said that this isn't just a moment, just like how Black Lives Matter isn't going to just be a trending topic on Instagram. It's a thing that takes place every single day that we should be actively trying to partake in and better. She also said that his words affected a lot of people, herself included, and that she thinks that by him taking ownership and not just issuing an apology and then going back to work the next day like nothing happened speaks volumes on his behalf. She said that we have to allow people to prove us wrong, prove themselves. And she said, direct quote, I've learned this in my relationship. I mean, Zachary used to be an addict and he's done a lot wrong in a time that I never even knew him. And he needed somebody to give him a second chance in order to prove himself. He wasn't going to lie anymore. He wasn't going to lie anymore that he wasn't going to do drugs anymore, that he was just going to do all these things that he used to. And he made an insanely different path for himself and now is helping a lot of people because of that second chance.
It's interesting to hear that because obviously with Chris Harrison's platform and the years he's been doing the show and the massive following the show has, there's a huge opportunity here to make really positive change. Like there's a big opportunity for that right now, you know, as Tayshia was kind of saying, which is something that that we'll look for, right? I mean, it's happening hopefully behind the scenes. You know, Chris has came out publicly and said he is working on stuff. But if that is true, then he's going to come out and have a really positive impact because a lot of people want to hear from him and listen to him. And just like, you know, the cast here, there's a lot like Tayshia, huge following. Rachel Lindsay, huge following. you know, their words right now are mattering a ton too to how we go forward. It's something that the Almost Famous podcast listeners have always done, right? They've always rallied around, just like the Texas example, right? They've always rallied around the idea that people matter and that people should feel love and be loved because they deserve to be loved. They're humans. And I think the Almost Famous podcast here and many others in Bachelor Nation are saying, okay, this is a good opportunity to hold each other accountable, to learn and get better so that people out there can feel loved and be loved. Well, this headline's weird to me how it reads. Ashley, I need you to break it down because the article and the following of it doesn't at all go with what the headline reads. But I'm going to say the headline, and if you're listening, don't just stop here. Listen to how this is explained because we're going to read the exact quote. Rachel Lindsay says on whether Chris Harrison should be fired. Let's see what happens. Now, that's not at all what she says. She's a lot more clear in her response. Ashley, what does she say?
Yes, she says that he needs to take time to get educated on a profound and productive level. She says, I think you have to see what happens. I think I don't want to play into things too quick to judge someone, right? Am I disappointed? Absolutely. Do I agree with what happened in that interview? No. But at the same time, he has taken steps to not issue one, but two apologies. Let's see what happens from there.
Yeah. So the headline's a little misleading, just like headlines typically are. But yeah, she's saying, hey, he's issued two apologies. Let's see what happens. And we're going to continue to follow that story as well. It's not just a story. It's something that's happening in this world right now, right? This is an action that a lot of people are needing to take. And then obviously it just kind of came to the public eye during this interview with Rachel and Chris. Well, Ashley, this headline reads, and it's shocking. I mean, shocking to me. I did not see it coming. Maybe you did. But the Bachelorettes Claire Crawley and Dale Moss reunite in Florida just 1 month after split.
It could not be more shocking to me.
Okay. I was hoping so.
I did not feel like this was on the horizon. I wasn't sure that Claire would even be open to talking to Dale. I didn't know that Dale was going to have any interest in talking to Claire. The two of them were spotted in Florida last Tuesday, 1 month after news broke that they were going to separated. They were seen at Nocomo's Sunset Hut. So not only are they seen in Florida together last week, but she just posted on Sunday a picture of her hand with seashells in them. So probably still in Florida, with a ring on her left finger and somebody's foot who looks like Dale's, according to the sleuthers, is in the background of this photo. The caption reads, collecting memories. So, wow.
Okay,
this
Ashley.
This is bizarro to me.
I don't understand how this isn't a massive story. I mean, maybe it is in Bachelor Nation. I'm just a little out of touch with what people are talking about. But like Claire Crawley and Dale Moss reunite. We've seen nothing from them in except quite honestly, a lot of tears, a lot of rumors. Now, hey, if they find themselves back together again, I think everybody would celebrate that as long as it's healthy and it's good for both of them.
Oh, wait. Holy shit, Ben.
What?
This gets crazier.
Okay.
Okay. So there's that post that she posted yesterday, and we have confirmation that she's still in Florida. She's at the Ritz-Carlton in Sarasota. And there's a picture of them, Claire and Dale, holding hands at the pool.
They're not even trying to
hide it. And then onlookers said they were very affectionate, holding hands a lot. 100% seems like they're back together. They looked like they were having a great time. Dale carried her on the beach.
Okay. So they're not even trying to hide it because there's not many, never carried Jessica on the beach. And so you don't, that's at this point, it's just out there. They're definitely something going on. I don't know what it is, but they're not even trying to keep it from us. I mean, I would go as far right now as to say, yes, it's confirmed that they're together in Florida. I mean, there's pictures. They're at a hotel. Who knows what's going on, Ashley? Now, here's the second question for you. Where are you finding all of this? Like, who's out there tracking Claire and Dale down?
These bachelor sleuthers.
That seems like something that would give me. If I start reading those blogs, I'd be in a corner in the fetal position, just bawling, so sad because I'm sure they know everything, or at least
Bachelor
they think
Nation
they do.
Scoop. It's an Instagram account posting the photos.
Oh, okay, I follow that one. That one's sometimes fun because I can keep track of my friends and what they're up to. well, the story's wide. We'll keep track of it. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next week. Maybe they'll post a picture together and. Just really started. Well,
I'm smiling because like I'm happy for her. This is great.
You're
this
happy.
Is very exciting and
that's
so
good.
Unexpected.
That's good. Okay. That's nice. This headline's wild. I saw it scrolling through Instagram one day. I had to scroll back and I was like, "What in the heck is going on? This is just crazy." So the headline reads: Hannah Brown's brother Patrick hangs out with Jed Wyatt's ex, Haley Stevens. This is according to Us Weekly. Ashley, what is going on?
This is so wild, guys. Okay, so Haley Stevens is the girl that Jed was allegedly seeing when he went on Hannah's season. This is the girl that he apparently called at the airport and said, like, "Bye, I'm doing the show," and now. Hannah Brown's brother has posted a picture of her on Instagram the lyrics that he posted along with the picture go to the song it goes to the song by Ashley McBride, which is called American Scandal. And the quotes that he uses, "Don't tell me the world couldn't handle a good old-fashioned American scandal. Hold me, baby."
Oh no.
Can you believe it?
This seems dangerous.
There's hearts. There's like kiss faces. Yeah, kissing and winking emojis.
This seems dangerous. This seems like it doesn't end well. I don't know how it ends, but it just doesn't end well.
I don't know. It's wild.
So we don't know if they're actually dating. We haven't had that confirmation yet. We do know they hung out, but that's as far as we know at this point, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, we'll follow that story too. Oh, man. Well, final story of the day. Hannah Brown's boyfriend, Adam Woolard, proposes to her in Jordan Davis' new music video.
So this music video comes out and she's kind of like playing the girl who is like going through a whole bunch of like different love scenes trying to find her true love. And at one point in the storyline of this music video, her now real life boyfriend proposes to her. I'm wondering if this is where they met. But we don't have confirmation on
that. Oh, good point. Yeah, I was like, how did they do this so quickly? Because it hasn't.
I don't know.
They
I'm
haven't
pretty
been
dating. Sure.
That would make sense if they did it, like, if they met on set of that.
Yeah, because he's a model and he's, you know, models are often in music videos. And
same.
I feel like, yeah, this is it. This is definitely how they met.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes
definitely,
sense.
But, yeah.
Well, you can go watch that music video. I watched it. It's cute. It's good. Danced around there has, like, I don't know. It's kind of like her story of dating. Mm-hmm. But Jordan Davis's new song, Almost Maybes, is a music video with Hannah Brown and her committed boyfriend. I think they're public now, right? Can we say that it's public? Okay, it's public. Yeah. Hey, Ashley, that's our podcast, and it's been a good one. But again, I want to finish it with two things. One is more of a shameless plug for the Almost Famous merch. You can go to myfanthreads.com/almostfamous. And buy some of our merchandise. And we've created it. I know the hats are really popular, the hats and long sleeves. So go check out that. Again, that's myfanthreads.com/almostfamous. I have to give a shout out to your book that you and Jared did. It's a great book.
Ben, you're so sweet.
Just tell everybody about it.
It's a children's book about making friends. And getting out of your comfort zone.
How do you
it's
find it?
It's called Lucy and Clark, A Story of Puppy Love. And you can find it at lucyandclarkbook.com. That's so sweet, Ben. But seriously, I'm returning the favor. Go get Ben's book, Alone in Plain
Sight.
That's
why I did it.
Anywhere books are sold.
Yeah, it's out there now. And we're a little bit over a week and a half into the launch, Alone in Plain Sight. It's been really fun to hear the story. So go read it, review it. Almost Famous Family, you've been with us for so long. It would just mean a lot to me if I could hear from you on this book, because I think a lot of it is stuff you would know just based on listening to the podcast, but also stuff that you might not know. And I would love to share it with you all. Finally, to end this whole podcast today, we mentioned some organizations, and Blake mentioned some organizations to support Texas. Please get out there and support Texas. They're our neighbors. We love them. There's a lot of struggle and hurt right now down there. Go out and support Texas. It's the right thing to do. It's a good thing to do. And we'll post, I'll definitely post on my Instagram, the link that, that he shared. I'll just screenshot his stuff, and we'll throw it up there. Well, Ashley, we'll be back next week. I'm going to go to Honduras this weekend and check out the damage done down there. And then we'll be back with another episode of the Almost Famous podcast. I've been Ben.
I've been Ashley. Bye guys.
Later all.
Follow the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.